I'm standing in line with the same coins in my hand every time. Quarters, nickels, counted twice, then again. The guard doesn't look at my face anymore. He just checks my ID and waves me through like I'm part of the building. The woman in front of me shifts her purse higher on her shoulder. The man behind me keeps his eyes on the floor. Nobody talks. We all know better. I didn't tell anyone at work where I was today. I said I had an appointment. That word covers a lot. It covers shame. It covers loyalty. It covers things you don't want explained back to you. When I sit down, I see him before he sees me. He looks the same, but something is off. Not distance. Not anger. Something careful. He smiles, like he's checking for cracks. When the phone slides across the table, I realize my hand is shaking, and I don't know if I'm nervous because I love him, or because I'm starting to feel alone even when he's right in front of me. My name is Laura Whitaker. I was 36 when my week started revolving around a prison schedule instead of a calendar. I wake up before my alarm most days. Not because I'm rested, because my body learned when to worry. I lie there and listen to the house. The refrigerator hums, the pipes click. Outside, a truck passes on the highway. The sound stretching and fading, like something leaving. I check my phone, even though I know there's nothing there yet. No missed call, no message, too early. I make coffee the same way every morning. Cheap grounds, too much water. I drink it standing up, because sitting feels like settling, and settling feels dangerous. While it brews, I count what I need to get through the day. Gas, lunch, a money order if I'm sending one. I do the math in my head like a habit I can't break. Work starts at 7. I'm on my feet by 6:30, pulling on the same jeans, the same steel-toe boots. The mirror in the hallway shows me a woman who looks steady. Hair pulled back, shoulders square, no makeup except mascara I've been stretching too long. I don't look like someone with secrets. That's the point. At work, I don't talk much. I keep my head down. I take extra shifts when they're offered. People think I'm saving for something. A car? A vacation? A better place? I let them think that. Nobody wants the real answer. The real answer is measured in 15-minute phone calls and commissary balances. When the phone rings during his call window, my whole body tightens before I even reach for it. I step outside if I can. Sometimes I sit in my car with the engine off, staring at the steering wheel while I listen to his voice through static and delay. "How you holding up?" he asks. "I'm fine," I say. That word has gotten a lot of use. I don't tell him about the overtime that leaves my legs aching. I don't tell him about the way my coworkers stop mid-sentence when I walk into the break room. I don't tell him about my sister, changing the subject every time his name comes up. I don't tell him about the looks at the grocery store when someone recognizes me from visitation day. I tell him small things, safe things, the weather, a stray cat that keeps coming around the house, the way the neighbor's kid rides his bike in circles until dark. He listens, but sometimes it feels like he's listening past me. Like there's someone else in the room with him I can't see. Our calls end abruptly. Always. A click. A recorded voice. Gone. I stare at the phone afterward, my reflection warped in the screen. It feels rude to move on too fast, like he might still be there somehow. Like if I hang up my end too quickly, it means I didn't need him enough. The drive home is quiet. Fields. Fences. Long stretches of nothing. I know every bend in the road, every billboard that hasn't changed in years. Rural Ohio doesn't rush you. It waits you out. At home, the mail is either nothing or too much. Bills. A letter from him. Sometimes both. I open his letters first, even if I tell myself I won't. The paper smells faintly like the place he's in. Institutional. Clean and stale at the same time. His handwriting used to be messy. Now it's careful. Straight lines, even spacing. Like someone told him how it should look. He writes about his days. About classes. About staying out of trouble. He asks about my job. He thanks me for the money I sent last week. I read the letters twice. Once for what's there. Once for what isn't. I notice what he doesn't say. I notice how often he tells me not to worry. Visitation days. Take preparation. Clothes picked days in advance. Nothing too tight. Nothing too loose. No metal. No extra layers. I lay everything out on the bed, like I'm packing for something important, because I am. I drive there early, even though it doesn't help. I sit in the parking lot, with my hands in my lap, watching other cars pull in. Couples. Mothers. Kids who look bored already. We nod at each other sometimes. Not friendly. Not cold. Just recognition. Inside, the air feels heavier. Rules are posted everywhere, even places you don't need them. I know them all by heart. I know how many seconds I'm allowed to hug him. I know where to sit. I know not to cry. When he comes out, there's always a moment where I have to adjust. He's him, but not fully. There's a delay in his movements, a caution. He smiles fast and then checks himself, like he remembers where he is. We talk about things that fit inside the walls. We avoid anything that might echo too loud. Sometimes I catch myself watching him, instead of listening. Watching how he holds the phone. Watching how he scans the room. Watching how his eyes flick away when I ask certain questions. I don't press. Pressing feels like risk. After, I drive home alone. That part never gets easier. The road feels longer. The sky feels wider. I turn the radio on just to have a voice in the car that doesn't disappear without warning. My family doesn't ask anymore. At first, they did. Careful questions. Concern disguised as curiosity. Then fewer questions. Then none. At holidays, his name sits between us like something we don't touch. When my sister talks about her husband, I nod. When my mother asks if I'm seeing anyone, I say no. I don't add anything else. At night, I sit on the couch with my phone beside me. Always charged. Always close. I watch shows I don't care about just to fill the room with sound. Silence makes my thoughts louder. Sometimes I wonder when my life got so quiet. Sometimes I wonder if it was always like this, and I just didn't notice. Money is a constant weight. Every decision runs through the same filter. Can I afford this, after what I sent him? Do I need this more than he does? I skip things without thinking. New clothes, dinners out, repairs that can wait. I tell myself it's temporary. I tell myself love asks for patience. But some nights, when I'm counting out cash at the kitchen table, the numbers blur. My hands ache. My chest feels tight in a way that has nothing to do with missing him, and everything to do with holding everything else up alone. I don't say that out loud. Not to him. Not to anyone. The first crack doesn't come with drama. It comes quietly, during a call where he asks if I can send a little extra next time, just until things settle. His voice is calm, reasonable. I say yes before I think about it. After we hang up, I sit there longer than usual. The phone is warm in my hand. My stomach feels hollow. Not empty, hollow. I realize I didn't ask why. The first thing that changes is my sleep. I still go to bed at the same time. I still set the alarm. But my mind doesn't shut off the way it used to. I lie there, replaying conversations. Not arguments. Not fights. Just moments that didn't land right. A pause that stretched too long. A laugh that came too late. A question he answered without answering. I tell myself I'm overthinking. That word works like a sedative if you say it enough. The calls keep coming. mostly on time, sometimes not. When he misses one, my chest tightens in a way that feels familiar now. He always has a reason, count issues, a lockdown, someone else messing things up for everyone. I accept the reasons, the way I accept weather, as something that just happens to me. At work, I start picking up more shifts without being asked. My supervisor notices. She tells me I'm a hard worker, that she appreciates my reliability. I nod and thank her. I don't tell her I'm scared of the days when I don't have somewhere to be. My phone bill goes up. So does the commissary balance. He doesn't ask directly every time. Sometimes he mentions prices going up. Sometimes he jokes about how expensive it is to stay sane inside. Sometimes he just goes quiet after telling me he's out of basics again. Silence does more work than words. I start sending money before he asks. It feels easier than waiting. Letters come slower. When they do, they're shorter. Less detail. More reassurance. He tells me I'm strong. That he couldn't do this without me. That he tells people about me. I picture that. Him telling people. I don't know who those people are. During visitation, I notice things I didn't before. Not because they're new, but because I stopped ignoring them. The way he shifts when certain names are announced. The way he lowers his voice without meaning to. The way his attention drifts toward the far side of the room, then snaps back. I ask him how he's really doing. He says he's fine. The word hits me differently coming from him. I don't push. I never push. One afternoon, while waiting in line for the vending machines, I overhear two women talking. Not whispering, not loudly either, just talking like they assume no one else matters. One of them laughs. She mentions a guy who always has money on his books, because he's got someone on the outside who never says no. I feel heat rise up my neck. I stare straight ahead, like I didn't hear a thing. On the drive home, I tell myself it's coincidence. There are thousands of men inside. Thousands of women waiting. Stories overlap. That doesn't mean they're about us. Still, that night, I reread his last letter. I read the part where he thanks me again. I read the way he phrases it. Careful, polished, almost rehearsed. I fold the letter slower than usual. A week later, a call comes through late. Not outside the window, not expected. I step out of the break room and answer anyway. He sounds distracted. Rushed. He asks me how much I can send next time. Not if, how much. I say a number without checking my account first. I hear myself say it and don't recognize the voice. After we hang up, my hands shake so badly I have to sit down on the curb behind the building. The concrete is cold through my jeans. My breath feels shallow. I open my banking app. I stare at the balance. For the first time since this started, the numbers scare me. That night, I lie awake thinking about everything I haven't asked. Everything I chose not to hear. I think about the woman in line. I think about the way he watches the room. I think about how easily my yes comes now. I tell myself love isn't supposed to feel easy. I tell myself sacrifice is proof. The next letter I get doesn't help. It's shorter than the last one. He talks about stress, about needing to keep things smooth, about how complicated everything gets when people don't have support. He tells me not to worry again. I put the letter down and stare at the wall. The paint has a small crack near the corner I've never fixed. I trace it with my eyes until my head feels quiet. I don't write back right away. That's new. When I finally do, I keep it light. I don't mention money. I don't mention rumors. I don't mention how tired I am. I tell him about the cat again, about work, about nothing. He calls the next day. Did you get my letter? He asks. Yes, I say. There's a pause. Not long, just noticeable. You good? He asks. I'm fine, I say. The word feels heavier now, like it's carrying something else underneath. A few days later, I get a message from a number I don't recognize. It's brief. No greeting, just a question about him, about how long I've known him. My heart races. I don't respond. Later, during visitation, I mention it casually. I watch his face carefully when I do. He stiffens just a little, too little for anyone else to notice. He tells me not to worry about it, that people stir things up. I nod. I always nod. On the drive home, the sky darkens fast. A storm rolls in without warning. Rain hits the windshield hard, blurring everything ahead. I grip the steering wheel tighter than I need to. I realize I'm angry. Not at him, at myself. Angry for being careful with everyone else and careless with my own life. Angry for managing his comfort while letting mine erode. Angry for being proud of how much I can endure. That night, I sit at the kitchen table with a stack of bills and an envelope. I count the cash slowly. I recount it. I check the numbers again. I tell myself, this is the last time I stretch like this. I tell myself things will change soon. I fill out the money order. My name, his number, the amount. My hand hesitates for just a second before signing. In that second, I know exactly what I'm doing. I know I'm choosing quiet over truth. I know I'm choosing to keep this going, no matter the cost. I sign anyway. When I drop the envelope in the mailbox the next morning, I don't watch it fall. I turn away before it disappears. Because if I let myself see it go, I might admit that something in me crossed a line I can't uncross. The days don't fall apart after that. That's what surprises me most. Everything keeps moving the way it always has. I still wake up early. I still make bad coffee. I still drive the same roads and punch the same clock. If someone were watching from the outside, they wouldn't see a break. They'd see consistency, reliability, a woman holding her life together. Inside, something loosens. It starts with small things. I don't rush to the phone the second it rings anymore. I let it buzz once before answering. Sometimes twice. I tell myself I'm busy. Sometimes that's even true. When he talks, I listen, but not the way I used to. I don't lean forward into his words. I don't build my day around them. I hear them, then I let them go. He notices. "You quiet," he says, during one call. "I'm tired," I say. That's true too. The money stops hurting the way it did before. Not because it's easier, but because I stop pretending it's temporary. I stop telling myself it's just this week or just this month. I accept it as part of the arrangement, even though I never agreed to it out loud. Acceptance feels like numbness wearing a calmer face. At work, I stop volunteering for every extra shift. Not all at once, just one here and there. When my supervisor asks if everything's okay, I say yes. When she says she can put me down for more hours if I want them, I tell her I'll think about it. Thinking about it feels like a luxury. The cat still comes around. I feed it when I remember. Some nights I forget. The guilt doesn't hit the way it used to. I notice that too. Letters arrive. Then fewer, then longer gaps. When they come, they're polite, familiar, careful, like we're both following rules we didn't write. I don't reread them anymore. Visitation feels different now. The room hasn't changed. The guards still wave me through. The chairs are still bolted to the floor. The phones still smell like everyone who used them before me. But I don't scan him the way I used to. I don't search his face for signs. I don't measure his tone. I sit back in my chair instead of leaning in. He asks me what's wrong. I shrug. That answer frustrates him more than silence would have. I can tell. He wants something to fix. Something to argue with. Shrugs don't give him that. "Feels like you pulling away," he says. I don't deny it. I don't confirm it either. On the drive home, I don't cry. I turn the radio off halfway through a song because the lyrics are trying too hard. I drive in quiet instead. At home, I clean things that don't need cleaning. The counters, the sink, the inside of the fridge. I throw out expired food without replacing it. I don't make a list. I realize how many things in my life were placeholders. Meals, plans, conversations, all set up for a future I kept postponing. I stop picturing it. My sister calls one night, just to talk. She tells me about her kids, about work, about nothing important. When she pauses, waiting for me to fill the space, I don't rush. "How are you?" she asks. "I'm okay," I say. She doesn't push. That feels like kindness now, not distance. The phone calls from him become less frequent. Not dramatically, just enough to notice. When they come, they're shorter. He asks about money less directly, but it's still there, woven into comments, framed as concern. I send what I can. Sometimes less than before, sometimes nothing. The first time I don't send anything at all. I expect something to happen. An argument. A confrontation. A consequence. Nothing happens. That quiet sits with me longer than any fight would have. I start sleeping through the night. Not every night. But more often. My dreams don't feature phones anymore. Or clocks. Or locked doors. One morning, I wake up and realize I don't know when his next release date is anymore. I could look it up. I don't. That scares me less than it should. During our next visit, he seems restless. He taps the phone against the table. He asks me if I'm seeing someone else. "No," I say. That answer is clean. Simple. He studies my face like he's trying to catch something moving behind it. I don't give him anything to hold on to. When the guard announces time, I stand without hesitation. I hug him because it's expected, because it's allowed, because it's habit. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't comfort either. On the drive back, I realize I didn't count the days until the next visit. I didn't even check the calendar. Weeks pass. Then more. I stop explaining myself to people who don't ask. I stop rehearsing defenses in my head. When someone mentions him, I answer plainly. When they don't, I let it stay that way. At night, the house feels bigger, not emptier, bigger. Like there's space I didn't know how to use before. I buy new coffee, better coffee. I sit down to drink it instead of standing at the counter. I let myself linger over things that don't serve anyone else. One evening, my phone rings. During his usual window, I watch it light up from across the room. I finish what I'm doing before I answer. He sounds surprised. "I thought maybe you were busy," he says. "I was," I say. We talk. About nothing important. About the weather. About time passing. He asks me if I'm okay again. "Yes," I say. This time, the word feels closer to the truth. When we hang up, I don't hold the phone afterward. I set it down and move on to something else. The silence doesn't press against me. It just exists. I don't know what this is now. I don't label it. I still care. I know that. But it's no longer the kind of care that costs me sleep, or breath, or dignity. It's quieter, more distant, less demanding. Some nights, I think about ending it cleanly. A conversation, a decision, a line drawn. Other nights, I think about letting it fade the way it already is. Neither option feels urgent anymore. The last letter I get sits unopened on the table for 2 days. When I finally read it, there's nothing new inside. Just words filling space. I fold it once and set it aside. Outside, the cat watches me from the yard. It doesn't come closer. It doesn't leave either. We look at each other for a moment, then go back to what we were doing. That feels familiar. When my phone rings the next time, I don't rush. I don't brace. I don't promise myself anything before answering. I just let it ring until I'm ready, knowing that whatever happens on the other end doesn't get to decide the shape of my life anymore.